This is Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Time to have a look at Turkish politics now. And with me on the line is Middle East and Turkey researcher Ian McGillivray. Ian, thank you very much for joining the program this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, first of all, for the listeners that maybe aren't familiar with where Turkish politics is at the moment, can you give us a bit of a thumbnail sketch on where we were at before going into this election on the weekend?
So basically what we had before the elections this weekend was Turkey has been kind of under the control and thumb of President Tayyip Erdogan since a coup attempt in 2013. We've seen a very strong centralized state under a state of emergency. These elections were brought forward. They were supposed to be in 2019, but they've been brought forward to this last weekend. And what we've seen happening over that thing has been sort of a repression of opposition, a consolidation of power within the state and all levers of the state under this new presidency that Erdogan has put forward.
So that coup attempt, I remember it happening in 2013, and they, I think, briefly closed the airport and such. It sounded quite serious, but it was ultimately unsuccessful. Is that right?
That's correct. Well, it's unsure who's conducted it, so because it's quite opaque, finding out evidence of who conducted it. But it's said to be done by members of what the Turkish state see as their kind of nemesis called the Gulen movement. And they were seen as the ones who orchestrated the coup attempt. But in this post-coup period, we've seen the kind of the arrest of Gulen members and, of course, opposition and dissenting voices as well.
So what are the main points of disagreement between the government, the ruling class, and the opposition?
Well, look, what we have in Turkey is pretty much a style of kind of a majoritarian-style democracy until, obviously, the recent election, in which we've seen a shift from a liberal-style majoritarian democracy to more of an authoritarian-style form of government. But the main kind of key ideas that play around in the sort of dichotomy between the Erdogan's Justice and Development Party, which has had a strong hold over Turkish politics for the last 16 years, and the kind of disparate groups in the opposition is based on identity politics and based on direction of the country in terms of education, economic policies, foreign policy, etc.
So how free were these elections? You're saying that maybe they weren't quite as free and transparent as they could have been.
Well, look, the OSCE just put out a report yesterday. It was quite a damning one, saying that the elections were not fair and free. While there was, you know, there is an 87% participation rate, so there is that kind of, there is that democracy within Turkey. People do appreciate the idea of voting more so than in other sort of democratic countries. There was a lot of skew towards the government in terms of legislation. 90% of the media is controlled by the Turkish government or allies close to the Turkish government. We also have, of course, one of the presidential candidates was actually in jail and campaigning from jail. His name is Selahattin Demirtas. He's from the pro-Kurdish majority party. And of course, as well, you know, a raft of legislation that had been put in place that kind of skewed the elections towards the government in its favor.
So what sort of landscape did it look like? How many parties were running or how many presidential candidates were there?
So because this election, what happened with this election is that last year a referendum was held in which it would create this new shifting from a parliamentarian system to a presidential system. And as part of that, the president and the parliament would have elections on the same day. So what we had in terms of the parliament is we had two disparate groups. So we had the Cumhur Alliance, which is the People's Alliance. That's the Justice and Development Party, Erdogan's party, and its ally, the National Action Party. So they formed one part of the group of alliance. Then we had the opposition groups, which actually were disparate groups across the opposition that formed a majority three parties, which was the E Party, which is with Meral Akşener. You had the Republican People's Party, which is kind of the main leftist party, with Muharrem İnce, who was seen as the kind of the lead opposition candidate. And, you know, you had Saadet Partisi, which was an Islamist party as well. And then outside of that, you had the HDP, which is the majority Kurdish party that I mentioned before. On top of that as well, you had the presidential candidates, but you had kind of four key presidential candidates, as I mentioned, Meral Akşener, Muharrem İnce, Erdogan, Selahattin Demirtas, as the kind of the key players in the election.
So just describe what the results were. I mean, sometimes the results don't really matter too much if it wasn't a fully free and fair election. But basically, the current incumbent, they won in a landslide. Is that correct?
Well, look, they won Erdogan in the presidential elections. Erdogan won 53%. While I just have to state, though, while there was accusations of fraud and vote tampering and stuff, you know, the opposition leader Muharrem Ince even conceded and stated that the fraud wasn't that significant to change the results. So we can see that there was a popular upswell towards the party, towards Erdogan and the party, and of course its opposition, sorry, its partner in its alliance. Erdogan himself, his political party, lost the majority in parliament, but because of the rise and success of his alliance partner, they won 11% of the vote. They've actually taken a kind of a kingmaker position within the new parliament.
So they don't necessarily have majority government, but they will be in a position to have control. Because what happens in Turkey if the president and the parliament don't agree on legislation?
Well, this is a new system. So all these kind of, these ideas, there's no, with this new system, there's a kind of concentration within the executive, within the president. So we've seen all that kind of shifting of power. A majority of the power has been shifted now to Erdogan's office. So a lot of those checks and balances that we see previously in kind of sort of democracies aren't really there. Erdogan kind of calls it the harmonization of powers. So while parliament does have some form of accountability and role in legislative abilities within Turkey, most of the power now is actually centered around the president. So if there is a, you know, disagreement between the two, there are mechanisms in which the presidency can overturn parliament.
And what's the outlook now for Turkey? This election result has occurred. What term has the government been elected for? And what do things look like going forward?
Well, look, there's not going to be much change to the current policies that the Turkish government has sort of been having in place. Since 2016, we've seen kind of Turkey take on a bit more of an adventurous foreign policy. It's had quite divisive rhetoric against domestic opponents and, of course, also its close allies, like NATO, the United States, and of course the EU. What we'll probably see, this election has just kind of sort of solidified power for Erdogan. It's kind of been semi-authoritarian before. This has just legislated it. So we'll see the same kind of policies, the same kind of divisive language, the same kind of adventurous foreign policy that we have been seeing over the last 2 years. So I don't see there'll be much change than what has currently been happening.
From a point of view of stability and just stable government, what can we expect to see there? Would there be another coup in the future, or is that now well and truly behind Turkey?
Well, look, the military's role has been very downplayed at the moment. It's not really has the same sort of power that it once had in Turkish politics. But, you know, in terms of stability, it's very difficult to say. This new form of regime that's in place is very based around one individual and one political party. So, you know, in its essence, that's quite unstable. But there are a lot of kind of challenges that are coming up for Turkey that now Erdogan and the AKP will have to address. You know, there is on the horizon, you've got this kind of brewing economic crisis. You know, you've got now an empowered opposition. Although the opposition lost this election, there has been a sort of energization that we haven't seen in the last 16 years. And, you know, there is a growing foreign policy and regional isolation that Turkey is now facing. It's no longer seen as a kind of a reliable ally towards NATO, and its EU process has kind of become moribund now, and there's no prospects of it actually joining the EU in the future by the looks of it.
Yeah, very interesting. And economically, what's the outlook look like for Turkey?
Well, Turkey's economy is very much driven by growth. Like a lot of emerging economies, this particular one is driven by kind of construction industry, sort of big mass projects, a lot of what we call hot money coming into the country, a lot of FDI investment. But over the last 2 years, we kind of have seen this foreign direct investment leaving the country. We've also seen the kind of the beginnings of a currency crisis as the lira has kind of lost about a quarter of its value in the last quarter. And, you know, we've also seen inflation at 12.2% and a massive current account deficit. So while Turkey's growing, has this mass growth, it's overheating at the moment. And, you know, kind of unorthodox economic policies that are being put forward by the Erdogan government are not helping this at all.
Well, thank you very much for being on the program. A fascinating look at what's happening in Turkey. And, of course, we'll continue to watch the situation.
No worries. Thank you, Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Ian McGillivray there, who is a researcher into all things Turkey and the Middle East, joining us this morning on 94.7 The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye.
Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.